as one. Over all the earth you've known, to be as one, to live as one, wherever we may go. We live in peace forevermore. No more fight, no more wars, no more attack, no more bloodshed. We celebrate one God. God is love, we've all been told, each in a different way. We proclaim love and an end to war.
Wonderful guest with us today, Jesse Marcel Jr., who wrote The Roswell Legacy. And he is not on air with us yet because I want to do some announcements and readings this morning, and I hope you're having a wonderful Saturday. I am now wanting to let all of you know that I am offering a special unique course called Archangel Michael's Earth Angel Training. By the way, Archangel Michael thought up the title for this course that I'm teaching. It's going to be 5 weeks of intensive intuitive development and training for ascension and world peace as given by the Ascended Masters and Archangels. There is a link posted on the Peaceful Planet Show site. If you go to About This Program, then you can access the class directly. You can also visit my main site at www.DianaSpeaksToTheWorld.com. Or you can send me an email if you're curious about the class. It's going to be starting next week on Saturday evenings at 7 p.m. Central Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will do one-hour conference calls with training in using your intuitive development, training you to actually learn how to connect directly with your guides and angels. And I will be facilitating that as well as sharing my messages from Princess Diana, Archangel Michael, John Lennon, and others who are assisting us with ascension and with world peace. This is what Archangel Michael said to me about forming this course a couple years back. He said, I and my legions of warrior angels stand by to assist earth angels wherever you are in need. Form communities of light, directing seekers to their own light within. But once the connection is made, no one can sever it. So many of you know that I'm a gifted intuitive channel and teacher and artist, and I've been hosting the Peaceful Planet going on our fourth year here. So I would be glad to work with you, and you can sign up online at the link that's posted on the Peaceful Planet, also in the latest BBS newsletter. If that doesn't get you there, send me an email at marciadi2002@yahoo.com, and any of your questions can be sent to me as well. So I look forward to having many people learning how to connect with their angels, guides, and more information on world peace and ascension. You, of course, were listening to the Peaceful Planet Mix. The song is being channeled in from Spirit by Bob Murray. More of his songs are available at thestarsstillshine.com. We have wonderful music from the late John Lennon, George Harrison, Michael and the Band, and others. And I also want to open our phone lines a little bit today for any readings. If you are interested, before we bring in our guest, you can call us toll-free at 877-876-5227 or toll-free Canada at 888-810-8322. Please give us a call and phrase your question with one question. It's a mini reading with the angels before we begin our exciting interview with Jesse Marcel, the son of the famous Jesse Marcel who handled the Roswell crash debris and material and worked for the government. You're going to find this show absolutely riveting. If you do not call in at the moment, you can call in later in the program and we can take your questions about Roswell. But I may not be able to take your angel questions. If you have something you want to direct to the angels, please give me a call. If I don't hear from you, we're going to put some music on, and then we're going to get Dr. Marcel on the line. All right, so it looks like we don't have any callers right now, so we'll go ahead and play Remarkable Nebulae by Bob Murray. And we'll be listening to that. We'll get Dr. Marcel on the line, and we'll begin our interview shortly. Thank you for joining us today on the Peaceful Planet. We're back. You were listening to Remarkable Nebulae by Bob Murray, and the lyrics are being written by myself, and we're playing Remarkable Nebulae because we're talking about visitors from the stars this morning, and we have a remarkable guest with us. We have Peaceful Planet welcoming Dr. Jesse Marcel. Here's a little bit about his bio. He was born August 30th, 1938 in Houston, Texas, and he is a retired Fulbright colonel who served as a flight surgeon for 18 months recently in Iraq. He spent 38 years serving his country with honor and loyalty. Marcel completed his pre-med undergrad work and accomplished at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he attended LSU School of Medicine at New Orleans, graduating in July of 61, earning a degree in medicine. Marcel joined the U.S. Navy in 1962 and was assigned to the USS Renville, and shortly thereafter participated in the Cuban Missile Crisis. After the West PAC tour, he completed his specialty training at the Naval Hospital in San Diego, and he retired in the Navy of 71 and went into private practice. Dr. Marcel, or do you prefer to just be called Jesse?
Jesse's fine. Thank you.
Okay. It's a great honor to have you on our show. You are most widely known in the world right now for your experience and your book titled The Roswell Legacy. And that wasn't mentioned in the bio, and I think all of our listeners would want to know that first and foremost, because
sure.
We have a lot of people very open to the kind of thing that you're presenting here. So it's really a nice honor to have you on the show. Can you say for us your website so that our listeners can visit that site right now?
Okay, it's www.jessemarcelsenior.com. That's all one word there. So jessemarcelsenior.com is the website.
Okay, jessemarcelsenior.com. And you are the son of the famous Jesse Marcel. I assume that's Junior.
That's right, yeah.
Who was your dad, who was a very prominent intelligence officer who had an unusual experience back in 1947 at Roswell, New Mexico. So what can you tell us about how that day unfolded for you and some of the strange information that came your way, along with handling that debris that was at the crash?
Okay. Well, yeah, my dad was the intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group, and that's the group that dropped the bomb on Japan, which ended World War II. And we were stationed at Roswell Army Airfield in 1946-47, and apparently something crashed on the ranch land somewhere northwest of Roswell, about 75 miles northwest of Roswell on the Foster Ranch. And the rancher, rode out and saw this strange material debris on his ranch there, and he didn't know what it was. So he brought samples of it in to the local sheriff of Chavez County. The sheriff didn't know either, and he thought, well, this probably should go to the Air Force, the Army Air Force. So he contacted Colonel Blanchard, who was the base commander at Roswell. And since my dad was the intelligence officer, Colonel Blanchard dispatched my dad and a CIC agent out to the ranch to see what had happened, see if it was a military plane crash or whatever it was. So my dad went out to the ranch and noticed this large debris field of foil and different kind of members, and he determined it was not a military airplane or anything that he had ever seen before. So he picked up representative samples of the debris and drove back in toward the airbase. And this happened to be late at night there, so he swung by the house there so he could show my mother and myself what this was, because he realized it was very unique, didn't know what it was. So
what did you see? Tell us about the debris and what it looked like.
Okay, well, what he did, he had spread, pre-positioned some of this debris out on the kitchen floor, and then he woke my mother and myself up so we could see this, because he realized that this was something very unique. And so when I got up and I went to the kitchen, I saw this foil-like material on the floor. There were some beams and some black plastic-type material. The foil itself was kind of nondescript. I didn't try to bend it or tear it or anything, but it had kind of a strange quality to it, but not unlike the aluminum foil wrap of today. The the weirdest part of the whole thing that I saw were the little beams that handsome, oh, looked like, at first, like hieroglyphs along the inner surface. But they weren't hieroglyphs, more like geometric symbols of various kinds. And they were purple, violet hue, kind of semi-reflective of light. And that was the strangest part. And I just didn't know what it was.
Hieroglyphics that were on beams, say?
Uh-huh.
And what were the beams made out of?
They're metal, and it looked like it could have been the same kind of material that the foil was made out of. And, you know, my dad was very excited, and then I think he used words that this is parts of a flying saucer, and so that really caught my attention at that point. And we looked at it for 15 or 20 minutes, and then they boxed it back up, and that was that.
There was no radiation exposure that you experienced?
No, I think he'd already checked it out with a Geiger counter when he was out in the field.
Yeah, because I know some people have experienced extreme radiation damage after seeing or handling or even being near a site where there was a crash or a supposed landing or something.
Yeah, I think
that's good.
That there wasn't any radiation with it, no.
Now, there was, like, an immediate press release that confirmed that a flying saucer had crashed, and then there was a later press release that was a cover-up. Tell us about the original press release and how that came to be and who was in charge of that and how did it get covered up.
Okay, well, Colonel Blanchard, you know, saw this debris and realized that this is something very unique also.
Yeah. Are you there? Jesse, I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you at the moment. And we're back on the air. Sorry about that. We seem to have lost our signal with you, Jesse.
Okay.
Hopefully no one's tampering with these lines.
Yeah, really.
I know you've let the whole cat out of the bag with your new book. And I know there's still people, or I've heard there are still people in the government that don't want this material out, you know.
Yeah, that's right. It was, they're trying to keep it covered up as a weather balloon. The cover story, this is parts of a radar target from a weather balloon, which is ludicrous. It was anything but that, you know. But anyway, you know, what happened is, you know, Colonel Blanchard had seen some of the debris himself, and he realized that this is not anything usual either. So he had Walter Hout, who was the public information officer at the air base, release a cover story, or at least a story, that this was parts of parts of a flying saucer. You know, the initial headline was the Air Force captured a flying saucer.
Yeah.
And what happened after that? My dad then flew some of the wreckage to General Ramey, who was the 8th Air Force commander at the Fort Worth Army Airfield.
Mm-hmm.
And General Ramey says, "No, we should not cover. We need to keep this thing under wraps." So he then ordered Blanchard to put out a secondary release about this was just a weather balloon with a radar target, just a misidentification, which obviously, again, was just ludicrous. So
yeah, and there are some pictures in your book of your dad holding the weather balloon debris, and he looks outraged when he's holding it, like, you must be kidding. He looks to be saying, you must be kidding.
Yeah, but look on his face, tells it all. You've got to be kidding me. This is not what I brought here.
And he was made to say that. But now, let's get something straight. Your dad had very high intelligence clearance. He was an intelligence officer, and he was located at the Roswell area, the base there, for that bomb command originally.
Right.
And so he had already participated in a number of secret things that had been going on during the war, as you mentioned, the bombing on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all of that, which was so tragic. But at the same time, you know, he was very trusted. So, you know, after this, he wasn't demoted or in any way taken off intelligence, was he?
Oh, no. He continued his career. You know, he didn't get out of the Air Force till 50 or 51.
Yeah.
When he was stationed in Washington.
Now, about the crash itself, I had Stanton Friedman on my show some years back, and he wrote the book, The Crash at Corona, and he talked about how theoretically there, you know, he uncovers a lot of memos and things like that from the MAGIC program. And he seemed to think, or seemed to imply from some of these memos, that there were actually beings on board that crashed and died. Did your dad ever mention anything about the beings?
No, I don't think he ever saw anything like that, because I believe what happened was there was actually two areas where the debris was found. There was a primary debris field that my dad was associated with, but then the main bulk of the craft came to Earth some distance away from that, and that, you know, if there were bodies there, the crew members, that's where they were located, but my dad was not associated with that one. Other people took care of that crash site.
I see. So I'm sure, being a high-level intelligence, he wouldn't have revealed that to you or anyone if he did see any bodies, but I just had to ask because I heard that there was a surviving body and that this person could somehow, or, you know, ET thing could communicate with the people, and that this person was kept at Wright Air Force Base, Wright Pat. Is it true that debris was flown eventually to Wright Pat?
Well, my understanding is that the part of the debris that my dad picked up, and of course more of the debris from the ranch itself, was eventually ended up at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where it probably still is today.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. What, good old Wright Pat. My dad served in the Air Force down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me many years ago that that these flying saucers were real. And he was not, he was an officer there, he was a lieutenant, but he did not fly. He was not in the air part of the Air Force. You know, he was at a desk job. But he said that other guys that he flew with had seen many, many, you know, of these sightings in 51. And when I was just a little girl myself, he told me that all this was real, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought, you know, my dad would not be the kind of person that would lie about anything, and I'm sure yours wasn't either.
No, they're absolutely real. They're, you know, they're, I think we're being investigated by another civilization that's obviously technologically more advanced than we are, because they can get here from wherever they come from. And I think they're kind of interested in this kind of primitive civilization that we are, kind of see if we can survive our wars and all that. And they just have an interest in it.
Yeah. Now, you know, I've heard that there are more than one race that may be landing or investigating us, and that it goes much deeper than that, that the U.S. government signed some kind of a deal in 47 with this group, this race, of supposedly the Greys, and that there's all kinds of genetic research going on their part and our part, that there's all these secret things. And again, it's so top secret, there's no way to verify that, but it does make sense that if they were going to cover it up, they'd have to have an awfully good reason why to cover it up, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not like the general public can't handle it, that there might be a flying saucer crash. I mean, I know that Orson Welles' radio show that was done in the 30s caused people to go into panic when they thought that it really was a true crash, but when this came out, you know, it seems like the general public is fairly comfortable with Roswell, and a lot of people, except for the really diehard skeptics and cynics that are trying to disprove it, a lot of people think it's real, and they don't have a problem with it, you know?
You know, I don't think people would in general have a problem with it. You know, NASA conducted a survey some time ago where they determined not if but when the big announcement is made, what effect would it have on people? And I think their study determined that the only people who would really be bothered by this would be the real fundamental religious people, but everybody else would be accepting of it.
Yeah, and I wonder what would be so bothersome about that. Even the Vatican came out with a statement, I think, sometime last year, that one of their cardinals or something said that there was a possibility of alien life and that all were brothers and sisters or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny. You know, I don't understand. Well, you know, the fundamentalist thinking is so narrow anyway. You know, I guess they think we're the only creation, and the rest of the stars out there couldn't possibly have an Earth-like planet.
Well, yeah, you know, just the odds of life elsewhere are just overwhelmingly positive. So,
yeah.
And there's many civilizations out there, not just one, but there are probably millions of civilizations out there.
Exactly. How could there not be? Just look up at the sky at night, and there you go. There's your proof right there.
Yeah.
All those stars out there are a sun. What's the chance of most of those suns having planets? Pretty good. Even I'm not an astrologer, you know, astronomer, any of that. I don't deal with the stars, but, you know, any common sense person can see that there's got to be life out there. So, you know, I work with spirit, and I also, the music that we're doing on our program is being inspired from the spirit of John Lennon and George Harrison. I don't know if you heard the first part of our show, but we played a song called Remarkable Nebulae, which has been received, shall we say, by Bob Murray, who's writing our music, and I am working on the lyrics. And John, I also am channeling John and writing a book with him, and he has said in one of his messages that that NASA's working with other extraterrestrial life on other planets, and he was saying this in reference to a song that he wrote while he was a Beatle here on the Earth plane called Across the Universe. And apparently, I don't know if it's SETI or what organization, but they did project the song Across the Universe to one of the local stars. Are you familiar with that?
Actually, no, I'm not.
Well, I think it might be SETI. It might be NASA. I'm not sure which arm of the government is doing this, but they have been trying to reach other civilizations through radio signals. And so what they did is they used the old Beatles song Across the Universe that was written by John and Paul, and they projected it to the closest star, which would be our North Star, Polaris. Mm-hmm. And in hopes that they would pick up our radio signals.
Well, we've been broadcasting signals up for many, many years, you know, through radio and television.
Yeah, so those television and radio signals are going out there, and apparently they travel maybe at the speed of light close.
It is the speed of light.
Pardon me?
It is the speed of light, yes.
Yeah, the speed of light. So they're able to reach some of these other star systems, so eventually if they had the equipment, they could pick up on our radio signals. And then likewise, the SETI group is trying to receive signals. And I think there was something recent on them where they were actually able to receive one signal, but it couldn't be verified as to whether it was an alien contact or what kind of code that it might be in, because all these would have to be in code, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, the SETI group is listening for any kind of signal that has an artificial quality to it, you know, narrowband signal. And the only problem is they picked up several that they are not sure about, but for them to release the information, they want it to be repeated. In other words, the signal has to repeat itself.
Oh, really?
It can't be just on one occasion, but they have to be able to divert the antenna and then look back at this, and if it comes back several occasions, then they can pretty well sure that it's an artificial signal coming from another civilization. But until it repeats itself, you know, on a regular basis, they just won't talk about it.
Yeah, and so that's interesting, isn't it? They've already admitted to you. You've spoken with these people, I assume, directly, huh?
Well, you know, just basically what I've been reading about them and, you know, on the internet and so forth. But they have very strict standards, you know, to before they release anything concrete.
Yeah, you wonder if they're in on the whole cahoots, too, you know, because the huge amount of government cover-up concerning anything having to do with the Greys, the aliens, the crash at Roswell. And it's a part of our mainstream culture now, but it must have been very exciting as a young man to have lived through these times and witnessed this and grown up with it. You know, you talk a lot about that in the Roswell Legacy, your book.
Well, you know, since 1947, I've realized that we're not alone, that there's other civilizations out there, and again, they're capable of traversing interstellar distances that so far we cannot do. But that did really engender an interest in astronomy and cosmology for me, because I realized that, hey, we're not the only ones out here.
Yeah. So you're a very diverse person, and you've also worked in as a flight surgeon.
Yes.
So that's interesting that you were there at Roswell, and then you've been involved in flight all your life, as well as being an MD. That's a pretty impressive background. So it's pretty hard to dismiss you as a nutcase, excuse the expression, by people who want to debunk this, you know?
Well, you know, some people have, you know, the skeptics, you know, who are closed-minded, you know, want to, instead of, if they don't like the message, you know, they want to kill the messenger. And, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah, well, I know how that goes, being a psychic channel for some of the people I work with on the other side, too, because, you know, I can verify a lot of my messages because others have gotten similar messages. But, you know, once you get into verification and you hold credentials and everything, if somebody doesn't want to believe it, they're not going to believe it. There's nothing you can do to convince them.
Yeah.
But I've seen Stanton on The Larry King Show, and he is a very fine researcher. And, of course, he wrote the foreword to The Roswell Legacy. So it's pretty good that you've got Stanton on your side, because he's a very good scientist and a very brilliant mind. And he talks about the cover-up, too. But, you know, I've had other people on my show that don't have any expertise whatsoever about you know, aliens or anything, but have written about personal experiences with it in some of their books. And some of these people are being actively monitored by the NASA.
Hmm.
You know, I had a lady call in a couple weeks ago complaining that she got another letter. This is a lady who's a grandmother, who is as harmless as can be, has no intention of any kind of espionage or, God forbid, what all else, you know. So I don't know why they would still... Do you sense that the government is still opposed to people releasing this? Have you had any threats or anything from government officials on your material, if I may ask?
No, actually not. I've had some weird phone calls, but that's the exception.
Okay.
But no threats or anything like that. Nothing of that nature.
No letters from NASA, NSA,
no.
Meaning the National Security Administration, saying you better watch out or anything?
No, nothing like that. I know some people reportedly have gotten these, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that you're not. I don't understand why my friend would, though.
Mm-hmm.
But because I know her to be extremely innocent, you know. But I'm just sort of wondering then, is there a branch of the government then, or a certain segment of people who've been involved in this long enough that are at this point maybe willing to release the information and let the general public know?
Well, I wish I knew, because I don't think there's any reason for it to be kept under cover right now, because I think people deserve and need to know. As a matter of fact, you know, I know the UK is releasing a lot of information, so is Belgium and France. So the governments of the world are starting to kind of loosen up on this cloak of secrecy. So hopefully our government will follow suit and just let everybody know what happened.
I would think that would be the normal thing, the logical thing to do, because this is a very a momentous thing. The thought of other civilizations being able to actually land on Earth, contact us, and, be among us, so to speak. And if that be the case, what is their ultimate purpose? And I have to say that the thing that struck me about reading your book was, is there, and this is just a question to put out there, is there a connection between the 209th Bomb Squad, which was secret intelligence ops, having to do with the atomic bombs? Is there a connection between that having been located in Roswell and the crash happening in Roswell? And were these visitors from another world trying to give us a message about the use of atomic energy or where we're going, the possible destruction of planet Earth? Was there anything on their part, or was it just a coincidence? I find it hard to believe that could be a coincidence out there.
No, I think New Mexico is a hotbed for their interest, because on July the 12th, 1945, that's when we detonated a bomb, the first atomic bomb at Trinity. So that's got to, be of interest for them. And, of course, the military with White Sands and the 509th Bomb Group being located. So I think New Mexico would be a very high on their interest scale.
Yeah, so the fact that they happened to be in those skies at that time, because there have been other reports of, I think in Stanton's book, I remember Crash at Corona, he said that there was another government base that had all these bombs that were basically on high alert, like once the button would be pushed, they could go. And there was a security breach at this other place somewhere out there near New Mexico. I don't know if it was at the same site or not. I don't remember. But he said that for 24 hours, these people reported having seen alien ships there and having reported that all the bombs could not be launched for 24 hours, and it was a big security breach. And of course, you know, Finn, he always gets into the information and finds finds the government secret memo that's been blacked out in part, you know. But apparently, it gives me the impression anyway that they were somehow trying to convey something to us about the use of these dangerous atomic weapons, which, as we all know, are deadly to Earth. And, you know, getting too many of them could be the end of our civilization as we know it. So are they benevolently trying to tell us something, or are they just curious about our technology, you know? I mean, I don't know how they could be curious about our technology, but, you know, they seem to be much more advanced than we are, but we know so little about it, we really can't say, can we?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, I think obviously there are weapons systems, and actually there was an event at Malmstrom Air Force Base, which is just north of here, a few years back, where all of a sudden all of our missiles went down. In other words, they could not have been launched if they wanted to.
That may have been what Stan was talking about.
You know, this strange object was hovering over the launch site there, and the people in the capsule below ground didn't know what was going on. All they realized that everything went off. And the people who were up, you know, on the top side were radioing that there's a, letting these people know that there's something going on up here. There's a strange craft, and the missiles just went down, you know, went down, and then they came back up after the thing left. So I think they're trying to give us a message about there.
Okay, so maybe I had that mixed up between Stan's book and yours. If I did, I apologize, but that's fascinating information, isn't it? What kind of technology would stop them? I mean, there's almost nothing that would stop these things, right?
Well, that's, you know, they're so, you know, yeah, they're obviously very technologically superior to us, so.
Yeah. So, now, you know, you've known about this all your life, but you're nearing the end of your career and so on, so you decided that you had to bring the truth out at this point, right?
Yeah, I, you know, like I said, I was stationed in Iraq for a period of time, and I'll tell you what, my mortality was questionable every day, so that's why I started writing the book, because I wanted to get this book written while I still could.
Who was questioning it every day?
I'm sorry?
Who was questioning this material?
Well, you know, being in Iraq, you know, with the sense of, you know, how mortal you are, you know, because death and destruction was all around you there.
Yeah.
I wanted
to
go get this thing written while I still could, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm really glad that you did stand in your own truth and that we've got this as a book to inform the general public that this was the real deal. And it doesn't mean that you have to put blind faith in everything that everybody's saying, but I would encourage our listeners and the readers of your book to read The Roswell Legacy, visit your website, and make up their own mind about it, you know. But I don't think there's any question that the debris you handled wasn't of this earth. And I think that's a lifetime experience that only you can speak to. And only you can say for sure that you know that it was not something man-made.
Yeah, you know? I can say that for sure.
Yeah, that's just an amazing, amazing thing. So is there anything else that you feel needs to be said about the Roswell situation or other situations regarding possible alien crashes and contact with our civilization? And what are your thoughts on why they're trying to reach us?
Well, you know, we'd like people to realize that that there's other civilizations out there, that they are capable of visiting us and do have an interest in us. And I don't think they are malevolent, because if they were, we wouldn't be here by now, because they've been in our skies for thousands of years, not just Roswell or more recently. But they've been around for a long, long time, and they're just following our progress to see how we do. And, you know, not to be afraid when the announcement is made, because it's pretty obvious that they're out there.
Yeah, and there's different rumors that the announcements are going to be made soon, or that sightings will be undeniable, or that they're going to land, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm always kind of waiting, because I think, you know, if something like that, if a landing occurred, that our government would get out the top guns and blow them off the face of the earth. I mean, that's unfortunate, but isn't that true?
Yeah, I think one reason they haven't made any overt contact with us is because we probably represent more of a threat to them than they do to us.
Yes,
and,
because look at the way we treat one another.
Yeah,
you know?
We shoot first and ask questions later.
Would it be, you know, and you've served in Iraq, and you know how wars go and everything, would it be beneficial to humanity to come to the recognition that that these visits are real, that aliens are real, they're visiting us, and that maybe we need to be unified in our stance because some of them may not be benevolent?
Yeah. Well, you know, President Reagan gave a very famous address to the United Nations some time ago where he did come to that conclusion. He said, wouldn't it be something, if we realize that we're being visited, that wouldn't that draw us together? In other words, wouldn't that, you know, bring about peace among us if we realize that we're not alone? And he actually made a statement to that effect. So he knew something more than most people did.
So do you suppose our new president knows all about it now? Has he been briefed, do you think?
Well, who knows? He's got a pretty full plate right now, so I think he's probably got more concerns.
But I've heard that almost all of them were briefed on it. But there were some that were more particular to. They were in office at the time of the Roswell thing, wasn't it? Was it Truman that was in office or Eisenhower?
Truman was.
Truman. But then I heard that Eisenhower was the one that had the secret meeting with them.
Oh, yeah. So, I think they've all been briefed on this thing.
Yeah, and I guess it was Stan's work that laid a lot of good groundwork for your work. But I say there's no substitute for personal experience, actually handling the stuff and growing up with your dad, who was such a fine individual and of such high integrity. And you pull that out in the book very nicely, because so many people are inclined to dismiss this as hilarious, you know. And it's so ridiculous that people find this amusing, because... Yes, on the one hand, little gray men and little green men, and it's all cutesy and everything. But, you know, beyond, you know, the laughable parts about aliens, there's a serious side to it that maybe we need to think twice about the way we're acting as human beings and get with the idea that there are more advanced civilizations out there, and maybe we need to be a little more cautious, because maybe some of them are not of the light, just like we have on Earth here. We have good and bad. We don't have everybody working on the side of goodness and mercy and justice and,
and you know, Stephen Hawking, a very famous cosmologist, says that, you know, we should be careful on trying to contact some of these beings with radio signals that maybe we really don't want to contact them. But you know, I think the cat's out of the bag. We've already done that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other thing that you may not know about me, but that I'm a professor of art history, and if you look back at the ancient records in Egypt and the hieroglyphs and the bas-relief carvings on some of the tombs, you can see what looks to be like little ships being carved into various tombs and everything, and there's no explanation for some of these carvings. And I've been down to Peru, and I've directly flown over the Nazca lines, and there's not much explanation for that other than some kind of extraterrestrial landing area. So if you look into the ancient history of humankind, into the ancient civilizations that are no more, you can also see ample evidence of these extraterrestrial visitors in the records. And the Sumerians, of course, may have even worshipped them. They may have come to Earth and regarded them as gods. And very often, if they were here, we have no way of knowing that they were, but with the records, they talk about different civilizations and different visitors, and they revere them as gods.
Yeah. So, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. It's all there if you just open your eyes, but you have to have an open mind to get it. So, let's see what else I wanted to cover with you today. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to say about your book or any quotes or anything that you'd like to, parting thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
Well, you know, I wrote the book really to kind of establish my dad's credibility, that he was who he said he was. You know, he went to intelligence school. As a matter of fact, was on the staff there. He went to radar school, so he knew what radar targets looked like, and believe me, this was not a radar target that he brought home, because if it was, I mean, if he had sent a radar target out there on the ground, he would not have even bothered to bring it home. So the book kind of goes into his credibility and some of the ins and outs and nuts and bolts of space travel, and that's basically what it's all about.
Oh, I think you well established his credibility in the book, and I would encourage all of our listeners to buy a copy of the book, The Roswell Legacy. And we're going to be closing out today with another song of ours. And I want to mention Jesse's website. Could you repeat the website again for us?
Yes, jessemarcelsenior.com. That's
jessemarcelsenior.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to mention my website at dianaspeakstotheworld.com, where you can see messages from Princess Diana and John Lennon. You can sign up for the new Archangel Michael course with me starting next week. And we want to close out our show, thank our listeners for listening, and we're going to play some music. Until next week, we have a wonderful guest joining us next week, too, on information on the Essenes, thought to be the sect that was around the lifetime of Jesus. We thank you for listening, and we're going to close out with, let's see, what song shall we play today? Radical Dolphin Mix. And thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you. My pleasure.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, good day.
You too.
Radical Dolphin swimming the seas, know something's up on earth. Sees and feels its truth, living in deep blue, amid shimmering waters. Radical Dolphin feeling something new, about to be born.
And ask for no more sonar waves. from Warren Machine. A whole new day, a whole new way. Just sunshine in the sea. Carry the coast, ready, go. Something's up on earth. Sees and feels it's true. Living in the blue, amid shimmering waters. Radical dolphin feeling something new. About to be born on earth. Singing a song. Gliding right along. Harmony in the waters.
To do your part to help the planet.
Save the whales.